Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Highway to Hoover podcast, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined, as always, by Mark Etheridge, my partner over at SEC Extra. We're going to recap week two of the SEC schedule, but before we do that, I have to let you know that the SEC Extra podcast, Highway to Hoover, is brought to you by Brock's Gap Brewing Company in Hoover, Alabama. Looking forward to spending some time there at the SEC tournament come May. We're super excited about our partnership with Brock's Gap. If you've been listening to our podcast since our preview episodes, you know that I keep saying that, but it's absolutely true. We're looking forward to announcing some fun things with Brock's Gap in the future. So we'll look forward to seeing you out there. If you're local in the Birmingham metro area, head on out to Brock's Gap. A lot of fun events out there. A lot of interesting beers on tap. They've got a lot of stuff going on out there in a family-friendly atmosphere. So check it out. Mark, we had ourselves quite a weekend. You know, it's different than it was in week one. Week one, it felt like there was a very defined top of the stuff that was most pressing and most pertinent. And there was just kind of everything else, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of picked at some things that were a little bit interesting. But this week is different in that even the stuff that we're not going to spend a ton of time on today, we could if we wanted to. I mean, this could be a several hour long episode, and it won't be for the listeners' sake and for our sake, I guess. The vocal cords would get a little tired after a while. Mm-hmm. But even in the series that we're going to kind of gloss over, there were some interesting things happening that otherwise we might be spending, if they'd happened last week, we'd be spending a lot more time on them. So it was just one of those weekends, but it was fabulous to have a weekend like that back where there just felt like there was always something to focus on and something different to watch.
Yeah, especially today, there were several games that were coming down to the end all at the same time. And you're wondering, okay, there's some upset bids. There's some teams trying to save, you know, and win series or avoid being swept. So if you're talking about A&M, and then you had the craziness at Auburn with the 12-12 tie, with the travel curfew, and that was a weird series altogether. So, with so much going on, and let's dive right in.
Yeah, so I was going to start with the series where I was. Spent two of my three weekend days here in Mississippi as I'm coming from you live from Olive Branch, Mississippi, in the Memphis metro area, getting ready to fly back out of Memphis tomorrow morning. And I guess I should mention at the top, if the audio sounds a little bit different today, it is because I don't have the normal setup. I'm on the road, so I don't have my normal microphone, but hope everything is still coming through okay for you guys as listeners. But so, yeah, I've been in Mississippi this weekend and top 15 series between Ole Miss and Maryland this weekend and got treated to two very different games. I was there on Friday, there on Sunday, and, Ole Miss had a little bit of a two-pronged thing happened to them in Friday's loss, where largely uncompetitive loss, where the offense got shut down by Jason Savakul, and there's really no shame in that. That's a Maryland's best pitcher. That's a really good arm. That might be the best pitcher in the Big Ten when it's all said and done. So not a lot to really worry about there, as much as they would have liked to have done more. But I think the more troubling part for them is that Jack Doherty started, and now remember, he's starting in place of Hunter Elliott at the front of the rotation, and he got through the order one time all right and had some highlights, but then tapered off in the third or fourth inning, whatever it was. And then because of that, we've talked about this before, Mark, because Doherty is in the rotation, he's not the type of starter that Hunter Elliott has proven to be. So that's one thing. And the second thing is you've taken him out of the bullpen where he can really be electric for you. So that really hurt him on both ends, because then once Doherty left the game, it just felt like Ole Miss was thin in the bullpen. And they tried a couple of things that didn't really work. And they ended up kind of, the game got away from them on Friday. Now, the next 2 days, you know, Grayson Saunier wasn't very good in Saturday's game. Now, I wasn't there, so I can't give you a real detailed breakdown there, but they had some of the same issues, walked a bunch of guys, but they end up winning that game 12-6 because their offense is excellent. And there's no issues there. You know, they got questions on the mound, but they got a ton of answers in the lineup. And then on Sunday, they run ruled Maryland and won it 18-8. So they scored 30 runs in the last two games. And that's kind of what they do. But again, you know, Xavier Rivas wasn't that effective in that start, and there were some nervy moments for the bullpen. And there was one point where, you know, Ole Miss is up 11-8 and the bases are loaded and Maryland's Nick LaRusso is up and He's already hit two home runs, and he hits a ball to the warning track that TJ McCants just kind of, you know, chases down and catches right up against the wall. And if that ball gets out for a grand slam and it's 12-11 Maryland, who knows where the game goes from there. But that's a long-winded intro there. But I think you kind of saw this weekend with Ole Miss that the good and the bad. This team is going to hit. It's an excellent lineup from really top to bottom. There's not holes there. But they've got real questions on the mound. And because this is different than last year, where last year it was just a matter of they needed to find the right levers to pull. This year, I don't know that there are levers to pull because the injuries are such that they were just going to be thinner. And because this is college baseball and not pro baseball, there's no one to call it from the minors. Like, the staff is what it is. And perhaps there are little moves to be made here and there, but it's looking increasingly like this is just going to kind of be the reality of it. It's early, but certainly the competition as they get an SEC play is not going to get any easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's where it's going to take some younger guys to step forward and contribute, right? Guys that you may not have expected to be ready yet, and maybe they aren't, but they're going to be. I think one thing to think about with their pitching is that it wasn't that they were just getting hit all over the yard. There was some of that, but they were missing the plate a lot. You know, there were a lot of walks, especially Saturday. So it's kind of two things that you can say about that. One is, okay, well, maybe their stuff is not the problem. It's just command. And maybe you can work with that and fix that. And there were some things to work with, right? Because if you're getting, you know, you're just getting crushed, there's not a lot of options there, right? But if you're just not in the zone, well, maybe you can fix it. So that's, you know, that's something that we can evaluate as we go. I think the other thing is, offensively, they're just so good. If they can just get a little bit better on the mound, they're not going to have to be, you know, the Tennessee staff, right? Because their offense is just so good. So it's, you're not that far away. You're probably not as bad as you showed at times this weekend either. But the other thing, I mean, and this is not just for Ole Miss, but this was for anyone this early in the year, nobody's stretched out. Nobody's really getting, you know, deep starts. So you're having to use more guys, and you're having to maybe have guys throw a few more than they're, you know, than they've prepared for or they're accustomed to yet at this point in the year. So that's where you get some of this. So, you know, it's easy to, you know, to throw the, you know, the pitchforks at the pitchers right now. But I think, you know, let's just kind of give it a little more time and see, is this really who they are? Or is this just kind of early season stuff that we see? We're not just seeing it Ole Miss. We're seeing it a lot of places. They kind of levels out over the next month or two.
It's a fair point. I think there's a charitable way to look at it, and then a not so charitable way to look at it, which is that Maryland is going to do this to a lot of pitching staffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that it's a very good offense. It's an SEC level offense in a lot of ways. They too today, especially, it was a warmer day on Sundays. So the ball was really flying. The two teams combined for like 10 home runs. Maryland hitters made the park look small too. They can really play. So Maryland is going to lay waste to a lot of pitching staff. So that's the charitable case too, is that, look, you know, this was the toughest opponent. And again, it's been 2 weeks. A big caveat on all this, it's been 2 weeks. But this is the toughest opponent Grayson Saunier has faced. This is the toughest opponent Xavier Rivas has faced. This is the toughest opponent any of the newcomers have faced, right? And there are plenty of them on the pitching staff they're turning to. But the not-so-charitable case is that, well, you're going to have to face LSU, and you're going to have to face Mississippi State, and you're going to have to face Arkansas, and you're going to have to face, even though they're struggling now, you're going to have to face Texas A&M. So, and those are lineups that are going to give them problems as well. So you do have to get better, but there is also the first part of what I said, which is that this is a really good Maryland offense. So, you know, I think that's what you can kind of take away. And they don't look now, but I mean, it's not really a good time for Ole Miss to feel a little bit thin. They have a pair of midweek games against Louisiana Tech, which is talented and a real tough customer. Mm-hmm. And then they fly to Minneapolis. And first of all, they play Maryland again. And it's not so much the competition, because they also play Minnesota in that tournament. And so it's not necessarily that the competition, I'm looking up who the third, they also play Nebraska, and we don't really know yet how good Nebraska is or isn't.
They swept South Alabama this weekend.
So certainly seems like Nebraska is on track to be better than they were last year anyway. So that's one good opponent in Maryland, one solid opponent in Nebraska, and then a team in Minnesota that I think will be overmatched by Ole Miss. But I say all that to say, you've got two tough midweek games, then you've got a lengthy trip, you know, mm-hmm. you know, flying from Mississippi to Minneapolis, and then playing some decent opponents. It's really, I mean, they're going to need a lot of innings over the next week. And so there's good and bad there, because you talk about exploring other options. They're going to have that opportunity mm-hmm. with five games this coming week. The flip side of that is that if you don't find more answers in these five games, there's an opportunity for things to get a little bit,
Right.
If it comes to pass. Now they're also going to score plenty of runs, right? I mean, we talk about that, and I've still got my, as the video viewers can see, I've still got my lineup card here from today's game. But, you know, Jacob Gonzalez, Ethan Groff, Calvin Harris, Kemp Alderman, Anthony Colarco, Ethan Leger, you know, TJ McCants, Will Furness, Peyton Chatagnier, all those guys came into today hitting 286 or better. And that's before a game when they scored 18 runs, right? So mm-hmm. most of those, if not all of those averages, have gone up since, you know, before the game. So something to watch. I mean, this is, because I mentioned that this is college baseball, not pro baseball, this is something that there are dozens and dozens of teams every year that deal with this kind of thing. Like you just get thin, and there's not a lot you can do other than just make the best of it. And mm-hmm. it certainly has the feel of this being a season long storyline, as it was last year with Ole Miss. I think it's easy, because of what happened last year in the postseason, it's easy to forget that it was pretty late in the year when Ole Miss found, air quotes, yeah. found Dylan DeLucia and Hunter Elliott and those guys, and suddenly kind of found the right combination. It feels like it was a long time, but that's just because the postseason is long. But it was pretty late in the year when they settled on all that. So there is time, and there is precedent here, but certainly they're going to have to get better in that regard. Let's move on. So mm-hmm. let's move on to, let's go Vanderbilt winning their series against UCLA. Yeah. This was, you know, in most other weeks throughout history in non-conference play, this would be the headlining series of the weekend. It just so happened that Ole Miss and Maryland ended up being a top 15 series, but Vanderbilt and UCLA is a top 20 series, and Vanderbilt ends up winning two of three at home against UCLA. And each of the three games ended up being an excellent pitching performance. You had Vanderbilt's Carter Holton and Bryce Cunningham doing a number on UCLA on Friday. Then the Bruins flipped the script. Alonzo Treadwell and their bullpen shut down the Commodores in the second game. And then on Sunday, Devin Fittrell and Nick Maldonado again flipped the script with a 2-1 win on Sunday to clinch the series. And so it was, I think, not surprisingly, because UCLA and Vanderbilt are both teams that have more questions on the position player side, and specifically when you talk about offensive production, than they do on the mound. So it's not too surprising, but I think it's a great sign for Vanderbilt that they were kind of able to win this kind of series, because this is precisely the kind of the way these series will have to go for them, I think, to win series against good teams. When they're in pitching-centric matchups, that works for them, but they're going to have to, when they have those types of matchups, they're going to have to win them, because those are the types of games they're equipped to win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their starters did not give up a run all weekend. So I think the point I'd want to make about Vandy is it's, you know, their starters pitched really well this weekend, but at the end of the game, they were money. I mean, Cunningham was with a 3 1/3 scoreless. Maldonado, I know Maldonado threw three innings on Sunday and struck out eight batters, right? When you've got that at the end of the game, and we just mentioned how good the starters are, I mean, that doesn't give you a lot of room. You better be feasting off middle relief, because there's nothing else. And, you know, that's going to be the interesting part for Vandy, because if they have that, you know, that elite pitching staff, they're not going to need to score many runs, and they may not, right? You know, they didn't score a lot this weekend, but in fairness, look at who they played the last two weekends. I mean, they, you know, Has anyone in across the country played a tougher schedule than them? That
hard be hard to imagine.
Yeah. So I don't know that we know what Vandy's going to be offensively yet. But I'm feeling pretty good about them right now. That was a big win today, and with Maldonado at the end, I mean, he was just, I mean, you don't throw three innings and strike out eight guys out of the pen. I mean, that just, that's not a normal thing. And if you've got a weapon like that into the game, that, you know, it shortens it. And Cunningham was, you know, he didn't get the strikeout total, but he was almost as dominant, you know, in his stance. So, I mean, that's a really impressive weekend for that team.
Yeah, Maldonado seemed like such an important piece for them as well in this whole puzzle, because he was so good 2 years ago. And last year, you know, frankly, his numbers weren't bad last year, but the expectations for him were so high based on his 2021 season that last year, and part of it was because he was nicked up, but it ended up last year feeling a little bit like a disappointment for him just because the expectations were so high. But he appears to be back in peak form at this point. And so to see him in particular be a guy who's leading the way, I think is really good news for Vanderbilt. And a classic example of statistics kind of not necessarily being able to tell you the whole story. Their team ERA is 3.78, which I think is not indicative of how well they've pitched as a team. That number is being inflated by some bad outings, you know, by some of the relievers opening weekend, and it is still kind of dragging that number down. And on the flip side, the team is hitting 239, which I actually think, as low as that number is, I actually think maybe overstates it a little bit, because it's, you know, Jonathan Vastein hitting 379 and RJ Austin hitting 355 is really keeping that number afloat. Everyone else is at, you know, kind of 250 and below in their lineup. And again, you're right to point out just the quality of the competition. We know how well UCLA pitches historically and should pitch again this season. And they, you know, they played a team. we won't linger on this because this is an SEC podcast, not a Big 12 podcast, but all Oklahoma State did is throw two no hitters this past week. So, you know, they faced Oklahoma State at a time when we actually didn't think that much of Oklahoma State's pitching staff, or at least just speaking for myself, I was a little bit dubious of their pitching, and lo and behold, all they did is prove me wrong by going out and throwing two no hitters since then. But so, yeah, good series win for Vanderbilt. Certainly that's a series win that I think is going to age like fine wine when you start talking about, you know, non-conference stuff, and truly going 4-2 in those six games. You know, now you do also have a midweek loss to Central Arkansas in there, which Central Arkansas is a tough team to peg. They've had some years where they've been pretty good and their RPI has been halfway decent. They've also had some years where the RPI has not been very good. So we don't exactly know what that loss is going to be yet. But in terms of on the weekends, going 4-2 in those six games is going to be excellent as the Commodores look to do things like host or be a national seed and all of that stuff. That certainly helps. And if you, again, this is SEC podcast, so we won't linger on it, but if you're UCLA, I think you probably feel okay. You went on the road, you know, to Vanderbilt.
I'm not going to see arms like that again.
Right. Those are better arms than they're going to see it in probably all cases. You're right, in the Pac-12, and they won a game, and it's a road series. So as you know, from the RP, I'm not telling Mark, I'm telling our listeners here, because Mark could, you know, Mark's really the one that should be talking about RPI stuff, but you know, When you take one of three on the road, it's really closer to a split. Right. So that's going to be helpful for the Bruins as well. So they shouldn't have really anything to hang their heads about. I thought it was a good showing for them as well. Moving on to not such a good showing against a West Coast team, Texas A&M drops a series against Portland. And I'll just kind of let that sit for a second. And now Portland, to be fair,
on Sunday to avoid getting swept.
Yeah. Just a torrid comeback. You know, Portland had brought back a bullpen arm from earlier in the weekend, and it felt like, or it looked like, I ended up watching the bottom of the ninth while I was sitting in the press box at Ole Miss. It just seemed like A&M kind of had a good read on him in that ninth inning. Like they had good intel, and maybe his stuff wasn't as crisp and all that stuff. So yeah, they were very much on Portland's bullpen arm there in the ninth inning, and to have that comeback. But you know, it pitched well enough to win basically all weekend. Detmer was good, Bonsing was good. The run total for Portland on Sunday wasn't very high, so I've not looked at that box score, but I have to assume the pitching was generally good enough today on Sunday to get it done. The offense just really hasn't been good. I mean, the only guy hitting better than 300 is Hunter Haas, and kudos to Hunter Haas, like, you know, because he's battled injuries and there's questions about, you know, how much impact he can have from an offensive standpoint, but he's not going to be the guy who's driving in runs and making this offense go. It's all the guys that we've talked about ad nauseum in the preseason, and those guys just aren't swinging it well right now. That's, I think there's no two ways about it, and that's going to have to get better. And, you know, if you're looking for an upside here for the Aggies, it's that they kind of had this happen last year, right? They lose a series to Penn. Now, caveat, turned out Penn was pretty good. You know, Penn was a borderline. They were borderline bubble team, you know, and I don't know that Portland is that. My previous job at, you know, at Baseball America, I always wrote the WCC preview the last few years. And so I've had a front row seat to seeing that Portland is getting better year after year. I think that team is probably pretty competitive, but that being said, that's a team that A&M's talent, especially at home, should not have that kind of trouble. I mean, maybe you have trouble on a Friday game, you know, and then you kind of cruise the rest of the weekend as the depth starts to show, but didn't happen. And it's a series loss. So the end of the world.
But I mean, the Aggies just didn't hit women on base. I mean, that was the thing. I mean, they stranded, what, 9, I think it was, in the opener. No, 11.
Yeah, it was a high number, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's just – I mean, when you don't get a lot of hits, you have to come through with the men on base when you get the opportunity. And, you know, last year they supplemented with a lot of walks, and they got a few this weekend, but – it just, they also hit a lot more home runs last year. And I don't know if it was weather based, you know, this weekend, you get that, you know, this time of year where it's just, you can't hit home runs, but, you know, that's what they need. If you're not going to hit for a high average, you better hit for power. And that's kind of where we are right now with A&M.
Hitting, just to put some numbers on it, hitting .230 as a team after this weekend series, again, Hunter Haas hitting .391. All right, you know, you'll take that. But Jack Moss, .269, Jace Laviolette, .269. And then Jordan Thompson, Ryan Targotch, Trevor Werner, all under .200. Austin Boast, under .100. Like, that's just obviously, you know, that's just not going to do it. And they will get better. Like, that's the thing is, like, it's one thing if you just had guys who were, you know, the fact that those numbers are so low, you understand that that's a combination of, yes, maybe some guys are pressing, maybe some guys are struggling, but it also probably means they're just having some tough luck. I mean, they were, to your point, they're getting guys on base, you know, and probably hit some balls at people. And that kind of stuff just happens. If they had won this series, even if the numbers are bad, we'd be singing a different tune. And that just is what it is. On a positive note for A&M, just as an aside, they're fielding .992 as a team, which last year, one of their pain points was defense. It was them and LSU and the SEC in terms of teams that just didn't field it well. And certainly A&M's off to a better start. I thought that might be the case. It felt like, and Hunter Haas is part of this, like a more, you know, an athletic position player group led by him there. So I thought it could get a little bit better. Obviously 992 is significantly better. They will not field 992 the rest of the season, but certainly a good sign there for A&M. Mark, anything else in the Aggies before we move on?
Just, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit. So a lot of times when you have a lot of new players and they did bring in, you know, more new guys again this year, just kind of takes a little bit of time to figure it out and get used to the different approaches at the plate that the hitting coaches have and things like that. So I'm not too worried, but it was definitely a surprising weekend because – well, Portland, what, they were 17-10 in the WCC last year. So pretty good, but I didn't really think that they would take two, right? You might think, I could see them getting one, but taking the series and playing for the sweep, I mean, they led in the ninth inning.
Yeah, that's, you know, you see that all the time. I mean, mid-major team comes in and steals a game, right? Because their Friday starter was just too good or – just something wonky happened or whatever. We see that stuff all the time, but to drop the series as a whole different deal. It also feels a little bit like one more parting shot, I guess, for me on A&M. It still does feel like they're figuring out the bullpen part of it. You look at the stat sheet and the guys that they were really coming into the season were going to be leaning hardest on are not necessarily the guys who have the best numbers right now. We'll see if that kind of comes out in the wash. It's still early to read too much into that. That stuff will kind of flatten out as time goes on, but it does feel a little bit like, and I'll just in the coming weeks, I'll have to watch more A&M because I'll admit that, you know, it hasn't been the team I've spent the most time watching so far, but that does feel like an open question for A&M. Agreed. Moving on to LSU and Round Rock. Interesting weekend for LSU. We knew this was a step up in competition over their first week where they took on Western Michigan and then Southern in the midweek. And that there was some good and bad here. Starting on Friday, Skeens was great again. You know, that they beat K-State, pulled away late. You know, K-State was pretty game for the first, whatever it was, 5-6 innings, it felt like, and they were right there. And then LSU kind of hit the accelerator and pulled away from them. And then they finish up the weekend by really taking it to Sam Houston State, 16-4 win there. Dylan Cruz had an excellent game on Sunday. But the most interesting piece here is the Saturday game. And that's not just because we're going to linger on the negativity of the loss, but I do think there are some things that came out of Saturday's game that I think are interesting to discuss as we project LSU forward. And that's chiefly, you know, on the mound again. We're going to sound like a broken record talking about mound issues, but, you know, Iowa got to Riley Cooper, and Iowa again is a good team. That's a team that maybe could challenge to win the Big Ten. I mean, Maryland's obviously going to have something to say about that, but Iowa showed a lot this weekend and they got to Riley Cooper, and Riley Cooper was the guy in the rotation for LSU that I kind of raised an eyebrow at, not because he's not a good pitcher. He clearly is, but he just seemed like a guy who was a really good fit in his bullpen role for them, and maybe moving him to the rotation, maybe he was ready for it, but maybe that's just not the right spot for him. And so I think that's going to be something they're going to have to contend with in the coming weeks if they want to continue to roll that rotation out there. But on the flip side of it, when you talk about the injury to Grant Taylor, which made them a little bit thinner, Chase Shores got through two scoreless innings Sunday against Sam Houston State, but they weren't the cleanest couple of innings. Thatcher Hurd started in the midweek against Southern, and frankly, Southern hit him all around the yard. It wasn't super hard contact, but he also wasn't missing many bats. And so is he the answer? Like, certainly based on Tuesday's results, maybe not, at least not right now. So maybe they do continue to roll it out there, and maybe, you know, Riley Cooper ends up being more like the week one version, who was very, very good in his start, more than the week two version. But that certainly is a question as we move forward.
Yeah, a couple thoughts. With Cooper, he was the guy during preseason drills that the LSU hitters couldn't handle, right? They were saying that he was their most effective pitcher. So you rolled him out there on Saturday and last week, and he was unhittable then too. So, you know, I do think he's earned another spot or two, and, see what happens. Definitely losing Taylor. I mean, he would have been the number two guy most likely. But I think the other part of this is that, Hurd was not that good, but in midweek. But you know who was? Christian Little. And, you know, LSU plays Texas Tuesday. I would think you're going to see both of those guys. Little did not pitch this weekend. So if Little does not start, then maybe they piggyback he and Hurd. One of them starts, one of them relieves. And you kind of get a chance to see if one of those can come in and be a weekend guy. Because if I'm a betting man, I think one of those guys ends up in the rotation. Maybe both of them, right? But certainly one of them. And the other thing is, you know, Skeens looked a little human in the first inning against Iowa after he was just perfect, really, against Western Michigan. And it was good to see him work through it and get challenged and come back out in the second, you know, in the second round, like it's a fight, right? And be able to really settle down and find his groove. And he was just, you know, he was great from then on. Just a really fun pitcher to watch. And one of the most, I don't know, electric players to come into this league, a new player to come in and have this sort of success. I think the other thing is, you know, he's thrown 98 pitches in week one and 101 in week two. And, you know, some people around the league are like, wow, what are you doing? But he's such a big, strong guy. And a lot of his late work was he wasn't, you know, challenged, right? He was just kind of in cruise control mode. So, you know, I don't know that you worry about, you know, pitch count if it's easy. But they obviously know way more about it than me. But I'm just kind of addressing some of the stuff I've heard. But yeah, I mean, it is kind of different to see, you know, a couple of hundred pitch outings the first, you know, 2 weeks of the year. You know, I don't see a lot of those. I see a lot of box scores. I don't see that. So that part's interesting. And of course, offensively, they're still trying to figure out what the lineup's going to look like. You know, Tommy White, he DH'd. He's, you know, he'll come back to third base at some point. We don't really know when. And based on that, that's going to, you know, cause another shift. What does that lineup look like at that point? You know, you had Trey Morgan in the outfield for a little while. So gives them a lot of flexibility. They've got so many, you know, options to flip and choose and match up. And, you know, if somebody's hurt or injured or gets kicked out for action rules violation or whatever, right? They've got so many options. So it's really a fun team to watch.
Yeah, they do have, yeah, Trey Morgan in left field. And of course, it, you know, almost, well, I guess it did come back to bite him a little bit just because he ends up getting injured running after a ball and you know, wrist injury. So that kept him out on Saturday, but Sunday was back in the lineup and back in left field. And he's a good enough athlete to do that. I've been asked a number of times by people if that's, you know, maybe where he ends up. And perhaps it's just tough because he's such a good defensive first baseman, right? And on a team that has infield defense questions in general, it was always an asset to have him over there because he could kind of save them from some of that. But he's also a really good athlete that can handle the outfield. And if their best lineup involves him being the outfield, that's where he's going to be. So I think that will be something to, like, I think you made this point on our, one of our preview podcasts, that just seeing LSU's lineup every day is kind of an interesting anticipated part of the day, because you kind of never know what you're going to get there. The old Forrest Gump box of chocolates theory. But, and on the mound, to wrap up with him, I mean, on the mound, sometimes I forget just kind of how many options they're ultimately going to have to play with here. You mentioned Christian Little, but, you know, Garrett Edwards was good today. And Ty Floyd is obviously an option. Heck, I mean, for that matter, Blake Money is an option. I mean, it's easy to forget now, but, you know, before he went out with an injury for a period of time last season, you know, Blake Money was really good early in the season last year on an LSU pitching staff that had much fewer options than this one. And so do they circle back with him at some point? That could be on the table. Absolutely. So they certainly have some cards to play here, but they are going to have they won't have to do anything, but it is on the table. They do end up playing some of those cards as they try to find the right combination. And they're in a position of luxury of being able to do so, but we certainly will see what comes the next couple of weeks as they look to figure out the best combination of guys as they go into SEC play. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I alluded to being in Oxford Friday and Sunday. Saturday, I was in Starkville for the middle game of the series between Mississippi State and Arizona State. First off, great experience. My first time at Judy Noble. I was there with over 14,000 of my closest friends. It was the seventh largest crowd at Judy Noble Field history. Mm-hmm. And it felt large. It took some time for it to fill in. There was a basketball game that started at such a time to where it ended about 20 minutes before first pitch, and it was a close game. So it got dragged out, you know, and how that goes. And so it took some time for people, I think, to kind of filter over, and that made it to where pregame atmosphere was maybe a little bit muted. Mm-hmm. And Chris Lemonis in postgame actually kind of alluded to it, that it felt like the crowd kept getting bigger until you looked up in the fourth, fifth inning. And it was like, holy cow, there are a lot of people here. So really good experience. And generally, I'm looking forward to coming back to both Oxford and Starkville, if not this season, then in future seasons. The weather this weekend was not conducive to, like, kind of your typical, you know, Mississippi SEC baseball a, you know, palooza type situation because it was cold and drizzly in Oxford on Friday and then was gray in Starkville yesterday and wasn't quite as cold, but wasn't great baseball weather. And it just is what it is. But regardless, State ends up winning the Saturday game 5-1 where I was at. And I use that as a jumping off point because they did some things in that game that they hadn't done a lot of leading up to that point. They got a great start from left-hander Graham Eintema. And I had to stop and think about how to pronounce it. It's pronounced Eintema as I learned on Saturday, but he threw strikes. He competed. He, you know, really battled out there and they hadn't necessarily gotten a lot of that, particularly the strike throwing part of it on the mound. They played error-free baseball. That's been an issue as well. And they won 5-1 and Coach Lemonis after the game described it as by far the best game they'd played all season. And they followed that up on Sunday by just blowing out Arizona State, again playing error-free baseball.
Really good.
And getting pretty good pitching from Landon Gartman. It's 2 weeks in a row where Landon Gartman has been solid, not spectacular. And I think that's kind of what he is. And that's okay. It's a Sunday with a Sunday guy. That's what you're looking for. So good series win. Arizona State, I think, is a improved club. The depth is not as good yet. And I think that showed. But on Friday, of course, you know, I kind of walked into a little bit of a nervous, and I wrote a little bit about this, uneasy, nervous Duty Noble Field, because even as late as Friday, they were really riding this strange roller coaster where, you know, Friday they get blown out by Arizona State. At one point it was 13-0, I think, before it ended up being a 13-4 game, but they couldn't throw strikes. They had errors. They couldn't get anything even going offensively. And that's kind of their bread and butter right now, is that lineup is really good. Yeah. And they couldn't even get anything really going offensively Friday. And they really, I think they deserve a lot of credit for flipping that the last two games to win the series. It feels like it's always really easy to make too much of a single result, especially when you were there to see it in person. It's really easy to overreact to that. But that being said, against a good team like Arizona State, or at least a talented team, let's just put it that way, I think this could be a little bit of a turning point. Just because they did some things this weekend that they just hadn't done a lot of to this point in a very uneven start to the season. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing my SEC weekend dish now. And one of the things that I've already written, and you just sort of encapsulated it, that Saturday game, if Mississippi State goes on and has the season that they expect to have, is going to be one that they look back at fondly, because they were really at a crossroads. Things had gone awry. You know, you're losing midweek games and you're blowing 10-1 leads, and then you get blown out by Arizona State and you get four hits. Even the thing you were good at, your offense, didn't come to play. So, and you're giving a guy, you know, his first weekend start, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, and then they come out and play the best game of the year. Right. And then you follow that with probably your second best game of the year, right, today, and get a blowout on Sunday. So to win the series. So that just incredible opportunity that they took advantage of, because this was kind of teetering a little bit. You know, if you look at it, you lose one or two games and then, you know, it's okay, that happens. But when it starts to become a trend of how you're losing because you don't throw strikes, I mean, look at Friday. They threw 214 pitches in the game, four pitchers combined. Walked 12. Was it 12? Yeah, 12. I mean, and that's your Friday guys. That's how you put your best foot forward on the weekend. And so that's why I thought Saturday was so important to them, and it's – you know, really sets up well that when they got pushed and when they were, you know, at their low moment, that, you know, that's the way that Mississippi State responded.
It'll be interesting to see moving forward what they do. This is one good weekend. Obviously, the challenge now is to extrapolate that out into future weekends, especially at SEC play. And it will be interesting to see how they continue to use their pitchers, because it's brought to my attention, shout out to Robbie Falk, who covers Mississippi State locally, sat next to him in the press box on Saturday night. And he pointed out to me, and I think he tweeted this, so if you're listening, you can go back and look at the specific tweet, but the newcomers on the pitching staff are throwing the ball so much better than the veterans, right? So you've got guys like Casey Hunt's been the biggest example, but you know, Parker Stinnett has had struggles, and or at least in his one outing, and Cade Smith struggled on Friday, and we have to assume that will get better as time goes on. But instead, it's been, you know, Bradley Lofton, a freshman, and Gerangelo Sanja, like, you know, he threw really well in the midweek and has kind of become a little bit of a sensation. And Nate Dome, the Ball State transfer, has been really good. And I really liked freshman Evan Sieri out of the bullpen on Saturday. Those have kind of been the guys they're leaning on. And it will be interesting to see the degree to which they continue to do that. And if some of these veterans are able to kind of fight their way back into favor, because I think there's an opportunity where maybe you spin this into a little bit of a positive where, hey, we kind of thought that maybe we'd have a rotation of, you know, Smith and then Hunt and Gartman and, you know, maybe Stinnett was in that mix, whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe that buys us some time to let some of these younger guys, these newcomers, get their feet wet, ease into it. And then by May, maybe we're looking at a much deeper staff, and they've kind of ended up in the reverse situation now. And, you know, maybe that pays off in the end, where by the time that these younger pitchers start to hit a little bit of the wall, maybe some of these veterans will be in a better place and ready to step up. So I think that's something to watch as the season goes on. The good news, we talked about with Ole Miss, their in-state rival, the lineup is really good. The lineup's going to hit. I don't have any doubt about that. And that's kind of the good news. That's going to keep their floor really, really high. And I think on the pitching staff, it just comes down to throwing strikes and not giving away free bases. When they do that, they've been successful this season.
Well, they've got a fun one Tuesday night. Southern Miss goes to Starkville. Could we see Sancho against Southern Miss? Would that be fun?
That would be fun. Yeah. That's kind of something I'll be watching this coming week is do we see him? Do we see Sanja in the midweek again, or do they end up holding Sanja to start next weekend when they go to Frisco? And certainly we'll be previewing that tournament and Mississippi State's involvement in that tournament in the weekend preview that I write. So look for that later this week. But that is a little bit of a subplot to watch is, you know, he was so electric in his midweek start. Do they continue using him that way? And against a good opponent like Southern Miss, that's not a bad option, because that's going to be
better opponent than they're going to face in Frisco.
It very well could be. And so, you know, so that is kind of this is an interesting week to be having that debate, because the Southern Miss game in several ways might be more important than some of the stuff on the weekend, but we will, mm-hmm. we'll just have to watch and see, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mark, let's get to a place you were at this weekend. You dropped in on Auburn on Saturday.
Yeah.
So I will kind of just clear out here a little bit and let you talk about what you saw. But I will first say, you brought up a great point in our kind of internal messaging app about that the most annoying part of this is that now Auburn has a tie, which means anytime we write their record for the rest of the season, we're going to have to write that tie in there. And that's just obnoxious. But anyway, Auburn playing at home, and I would urge, if you've not done so, it's still a story worth reading, even though the series has been played. Mark wrote a story right before the weekend started about the logistics that went into getting this series switched from Southern California to Auburn. And it was a really interesting read. So check that out if you've not done so. But Auburn wins two games. It's Sunday, got a little ugly. I'm sure Mark will tell us a little bit more about that here shortly, but they end up tying there. So a 2-0-1 weekend for Auburn. Mark, give us your just kind of thoughts about the Tigers.
Yeah, well, I guess first off, it was beautiful weather, you know, and for a series that if they would have gone to LA, they would have sat and watched it rain. So kudos to both programs making that move, getting the games in. I thought I was going to see Joseph Gonzalez. He was a scratch, had some soreness. He went through this last year, and they were careful with him, and you saw he was great by the end of the year. So to just kind of see how he feels, keep doing the therapy and see where that lands. But what that did is it really left a big hole in that Auburn pitching staff. And honestly, they just ran out of pitching. They pitched it okay Saturday. They brought guys back to through Friday. And Southern Cal can swing a little bit. I really like their position group. They're going to struggle on the mound. But Auburn really looked good offensively. for people who don't, who haven't seen Ike Irish yet, he's a freshman from Michigan who gravitated south, and he's Auburn's three-hole hitter in the opening day. I mean, he was their fall MVP. He's an advanced hitting freshman, uses the entire ballpark. I mean, a lot of times young guys are pull heavy. That's not this cat. I mean, he's going to fight you. Really cerebral kid. Was so impressed. And we're going to have a feature on him later this week. I guess the other part for Auburn, Bryson Ware has kind of been a role player, I guess you'd call him, through his career. And, I mean, he's hitting over 600. I mean, he's just been a huge pleasant surprise for the Auburn lineup. And that Auburn lineup's good. I mean, they've got some pieces. Justin Kirby has got 5 hits this year. All 5 left the yard. And he had a homer and a grand slam today, too, on Sunday. So a little bit about that Sunday game. I wasn't there Sunday, but I was following it. And, you know, it ended up being a 12-12 tie, travel curfew, so Southern Cal could get back to Atlanta to fly home. It was really strange because each team had 2 4-run innings and a 3-run inning. And also, Southern Cal in the top of the ninth scored the winning touchdowns. Yeah, I'm thinking football here. Scored the winning run, and the runner missed home plate. And Auburn picked up on it, appealed it, and they called him out. So it went from 13 to 12 back to 12-12. Auburn struck the next batter out, but he had to put him out at first because the ball hit the turf, and they threw the ball away. So then you had first and third. After you thought you were – first you thought you trailed, then you thought you were out of the inning, and they were able to get the third out to go to the bottom of the ninth, which Auburn loads the bases with 1 out and then flies out twice and end up tying. So just a crazy ending. Neither team pitched very well. But I guess my takeaway from Auburn is it's a really good offensive club. I think they will be better with some of the young pitchers that they have than they are now. They certainly will be more stretched out. They won't have to use as many of them. And if they get Gonzalez back, that changes a lot. But I was really I liked their lineup more than I thought I would. I thought they'd be solid, but they've got a chance to be better than solid.
I'm with you. I think I like the offensive group, the position player group more than I, that's exactly how I'd put it. I like them mm-hmm. more than I thought I would just through a couple of weekends, but you're so right that Joseph Gonzalez is a game changer if he comes back, and you certainly hope he does. And like you mentioned, he's dealt with this before and it came back and he was fine. So there's really no reason to get overly worried about it at this point, but you hope that's the case because Auburn feels like they've been a little bit snake bitten when it comes to this kind of thing in recent years. And it's one of the reasons why it feels like, even though they always figure it out, it always feels like Auburn is like an arm or two short ultimately the last several years. So you certainly hope that's the case, but I mean, again,
look at what they've done the last 2 Sundays. I mean, Drew Nelson starts opening weekend and gets 2 outs. Isbell starts today, didn't get anybody out. So you're really fighting uphill, and as a result, they gave up 11 to Indiana. They gave up 12 to USC on Sunday. If your starter doesn't give you anything, it makes for a long day. It's not a lot of fun as a pitching coach.
Yeah, I have to assume they were looking at doing an opener thing because, Chase Isbell is a back-end bullpen arm typically. And, so I have to assume they were doing an opener.
Yeah, I was there Saturday when he was talking about it. I mean, they really didn't have a lot of options. And he had pitched really well Tuesday in midweek and had been sick, so they had not thrown him Friday or Saturday. So they thought, okay, well, this is an opportunity. We'll let him, go as long as he can, right, that kind of thing as an opener. But it just didn't go well. Maybe he wasn't, healthy from the sickness. But I mean, he's an important cog in the pitching staff, so they need to get him right.
For sure. Okay, let's wrap up kind of like we did last week. I'll run through some of the other stuff that that happened. And actually, I'll tell you what, Mark, I'll go through about half of it, and then I'll let you kind of react to it, because like I said in our intro, there's just a lot of there's a lot of stuff that we can pick on here. So I'll go through about half of it, and then I'll take a break, and I'll let you react to some of it, whatever you find interesting in that little bit. So we had Florida sweeping Cincinnati. I think the headlines there for me are Hurston Waldrop pitched really well. Jack Caglione had a great, not so much a great start in his start this time around, but had a great weekend at the plate. So that there's that. Georgia takes 3 of 4 from Princeton. I think the headlines there are Jaden Woods pitched really well in relief. Liam Sullivan pitched extremely well in his start. And then Sundays, they took a loss on Sunday, kind of in ugly fashion. And we don't know how painful that loss will end up being, but Princeton, you know, was a 200 plus RPI team last year and could be that again. I don't know. Certainly a win against Georgia will be helpful in that regard, but so we'll have to just kind of wait and see on that. Tennessee sweeps Dayton by a combined 22-3 score. Obviously that's not really the headline there for Tennessee. Although, I mean, that tells you that they pitched extremely well all weekend. Obviously by now, Tony Vitello suspended, kind of what was described as a self-imposed suspension. You know, not a lot of details out there publicly on that whole situation as of yet, but Tony Vitello was out for the entirety of the weekend there. And then last thing before I let you jump in here, Mark, South Carolina sweeps Penn in a fairly tight, well-played series. There was a 1-0 game there for South Carolina in which Noah Hall pitched really, really well. That's a positive development. And so I think you might on paper look at it and see that they played pretty close against an Ivy League team, but you know, don't forget that Penn won a series against Texas A&M last year. And then as Mark and I discussed at the top of this podcast, you know, Penn was a borderline postseason team last year, borderline at large team in terms of the RPI last year. And we don't know how good they are or aren't yet this year, but if they're anything like they were last year, that's a pretty good team. So I think there's maybe a little more than meets the eye there when it comes to South Carolina playing Penn. So what of that group, Mark, kind of catches your eye?
I think South Carolina, the fact that they were tested, because certainly they weren't this weekend or the first weekend. So still undefeated, right? And in this world, you can kind of lose to anybody, and they've been able to make the plays. I mean, they had back-to-back home runs in the eighth inning on Sunday to tie and then take the lead, right? So again, another tight game that came down to the end, and they're pitching well. I mean, the starting pitching has been phenomenal. They've been able to get enough out of the pen. They look really good. Eager to see what happens when the competition steps up.
Certainly agreed on that. I mean, that's kind of it's life in non-conference play, right? We're all kind of just waiting to see what's what once they start playing better teams. I'm interested in the Georgia piece of it. I will be at the Georgia Tech rivalry series this next weekend. And I'll be interested to see which version of Jaden Woods I get in that series, whether they start him, whether they use him. They used him in relief after an opener against Princeton. So that seemed to work okay. Now it was Princeton, of course. Georgia Tech's lineup, of course, a very different deal than Princeton. So I'll be interested to see that. Liam Sullivan has been good 2 weeks in a row now. Again, understanding the opponent, but he's a guy they're really going to need. So I'm interested to see him as well. So I'm kind of fascinated by those pieces. And then also, giving up whatever, well, I think it was 12-11, the loss for Georgia in the last game against Princeton. And I understand any team, when you play four games, is going to get taxed at the end of that pitching staff. But, you know, Princeton played the same number of innings Georgia did. and Princeton ends up winning that game. So I will be equally interested to see what happens on Sunday. That could be with Georgia Tech's offense, and also the fact that Georgia Tech perennially has questions on the mound. I mean, that could be a 4-hour plus game on Sunday next week. So it could be both fascinating and maddening, but we will. Exactly. Yes. I will. Yeah. Pack for a picnic. Other things that happened around the SEC: Arkansas wins a series against Eastern Illinois, but got blown out on Sunday, strangely. Got good team pitching the first 2 days. On the finale, Hunter Holland pitched well in his start, but the bullpen let that get away. I think the good news there, though, for Arkansas is that Hagan Smith, Will McIntyre, and Holland all did their jobs in their starts. Smith and McIntyre didn't last that long in the game. I think that was, they were pitching fine. I think it was just by design. So I think that's the most positive thing there. And the bats did enough the first 2 days. You know, again, one loss to an inferior opponent, not great, but happens. I'm not going to overreact too much to that. Alabama sweeps High Point, and High Point's tricky. Like, I like High Point as a team. I think they're a contender in the Big South. Not, I still think Campbell obviously is the best team in the Big South, but I think High Point is pretty good. So I think that was a low key good test for Alabama. They didn't get great starts from Grayson Hitt or Ben Hess, but the bullpen was great all weekend long. So I think that was big. And High Point has some decent arms. So the offense continuing to be productive against those guys, I think was impressive. Missouri takes 3 of 4 against FIU. They lost the opener in a one-run game in the opener. They had the tying run in scoring position with no outs and then 3 consecutive outs, and that was it. So kind of a tough way to lose that. But they handled their business as the weekend went on and as their depth just proved to be better than FIU's. A couple of big things there on the mound. Tony Newbeck continues to be a revelation for the Tigers. 15 strikeouts, 2 walks, and 8 2/3 scoreless innings and 2 relief outings. It will be interesting to see if they continue to use him. I know there's got to be a temptation to continue to use him in a extended relief role. He's a valuable weapon in that regard. But also, you know, he could be a weapon in the rotation as well. And I have to wonder if as we get closer to SEC play, if that is an eventuality. The other thing is on the injury front, Sam Horn, who doubles as a quarterback on the football team and is maybe, I'm trying to think here, maybe Mizzou's best arm in terms of arm talent. His fastball has been in the high 90s earlier this season, or early, I guess we're still early in the season, first weekend is what I should say, and was probably going to grow into being a high leverage reliever by the end of the season. I have to assume that was the case. He left the game voluntarily on Saturday, not, you know, they would have removed him probably anyway, but he made it very clear that, like, he, you know, he was injured and drew attention to it and walked off. And so no real news on that at this point, but we will obviously have to wait and see. And for a Mizzou team that it's just kind of a bummer for the Mizzou team that was looking for additional answers on the mound and maybe kind of found one in him, and to then lose him is obviously a tough deal. And then Kentucky wins a series against Wright State. We know how tough a customer Wright State is. Wright State's not off to the best start. They also lost a series against Hawaii to begin the season. So we'll kind of see on the Raiders this year. But generally speaking, that's a tough non-conference foe. Right. So Wright State won the middle game. Kentucky wins the other two, including in runaway fashion on Sunday. Devin Burks, huge weekend, Kentucky's catcher. He hit 7 doubles and drove in 10. And that's like a full season's worth of doubles for a lot of players. Also, reliever Darren Williams, who I wrote about last week, has now thrown 6 hitless innings in relief. Speaking of big relief weapons, he is certainly one of them and could turn out to be one of the biggest relief weapons in the SEC. We will obviously have to wait and see. So of that last stuff, Mark, what's interesting to you?
Well, I think Missouri, just how many arms that they've had that have given them quality outings, especially out of the pen. That was one of the things about them, that they just don't have the depth that some of the other teams in the SEC do, and that may still be the case, but they're showing that that they're a lot better than some of us thought, especially on the mound. Yeah, and I think the other thing, and maybe it's the same point can be made about Alabama, that they've been able to pitch deeper into their staff. You know, we've had this comment about some of the other teams that as they've gone deeper in the staff, they've struggled. And Alabama just continues to find guys that can get people out late in games. We'll see what happens as the competition rises, kind of like with South Carolina. But they're also undefeated. They've been able to make the plays. And Saturday, they were down 6-0 and came back and won 10-6. So, you know, it's just kind of – I really believe this is the best Alabama team that we've had in, I don't know, maybe early Gaspard, maybe even to the end of the Wells era. I mean, there's some high level ceiling with this program this year. Just we'll see how it materializes, but impressed so far.
And don't look now. You brought this to my attention, Mark, but don't look now, but they've got Jacksonville State in the midweek and then a series against Illinois, Chicago, midweeks against Samford and Alabama State, and then a series against Columbia, which that's no cakewalk. Columbia was a regional team last year, is perennially a good Ivy League school. They've got some talent, but I mean, that I don't know how many games that is. I'm not going to count it up here as we sit on the podcast, but their first SEC series is Florida on the road. And that's a series I will be at. I'm excited for that. But that could be a real blockbuster, because Alabama could have a gaudy record at that point. And it wouldn't be a shock to see them drop a game or two along the way, but even still, they're still going to go into that weekend with a gaudy record. And that's going to be one heck of a way to kick off SEC play. So I too am kind of fascinated by Alabama. And you're right that, you know, in a year last year, right, where it felt like, you know, their starters really battled that. And that's what I could say about them last year, is that every weekend, it felt like they just got their starters were really competitive and kept them in games. And the bullpen was like a dice roll on what you were going to get. And it feels like maybe this year, and again, understanding the competition level so far, it feels like this year just could be a different deal for them. And
they at least have more options, right?
For sure. It seems like that's the case. And so that's exciting for that group, because, you know, if we assume that maybe Hitt and Hess are somewhere in between what we saw this weekend and the first weekend, which is still very, very good, I think there's a lot of reason for optimism. And then their lineup, as we talked about in the preseason, is not going to blow your socks off necessarily, but they have good players 1 through 9 in that lineup. And that kind of keeps their floor pretty high. So I think you're spot on with the optimism about Alabama, and just they're going to kind of be a little bit of a snake in the grass, just because they're going to be SEC clubs going into SEC play that have much higher profile wins, that have much higher profile talents and statistics and all of that stuff. But Alabama's just feels like they're going to quietly kind of go about their business. And then we'll see what they're really made of in SEC play, 'cause that's where you make your bones, but that will be certainly fascinating to watch. So that is going to do it for this episode of Highway to Hoover from SEC Extra for Mark and I, a jam packed week 2. So we appreciate you jumping on and going on this ride with us, because it was a fun weekend, a lot to talk about. Like I said, we could do a couple of hours on this weekend, just with so much stuff there that we really didn't necessarily get to dive in on, but that's what makes it fun. There was a lot of stuff to talk about, and looking forward to doing it again next week. But again, that is going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover. We'll talk to y'all soon.